Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's literally just to get the blood going and to clear the mind.
Why I run?
Well, how long have you got?
If not, why not? You know what I mean?
The Why I Run podcast.
The rhythm of your breathing.
I can't explain it in words sometimes.
The rhythm of your heartbeat.
We are born to move. We are born to run.
And the rhythm of your steps.
Running's a feeling, right? It makes you feel good.
The Why I Run podcast from Red Bull with me, Ayo Akinwaleri.
And me, Erin Azar. Subscribe now so you don't miss out.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Wellfar. I'm Amy Lane, and each week we break down the barriers to running so you can get more from your time in your trainers. I'm currently taking an extended break to learn how to juggle a toddler and a newborn, but that doesn't mean you have to rest up too. So I thought it would be handy to revisit some of our most loved and most listened to episodes from the past seasons. The advice and expertise is as useful today as it was back then. So prepare yourself for the cracking tips from the experts around the globe. Together, we'll help you reach your running goals this year. Today's episode is a rerun from season one, and it's a fabulous mix of expert advice and inspiring run chats, plus a 16-week guide tailored to support your marathon journey. So if you've started 2022 with that goal in mind, or if you are just keen to run for fun, then we are here to help you through. Keep up the good work, and when you start flagging, why not get involved in the Wellfar Strava Club or support each other from afar on Instagram using the hashtag Wellfar. I hope you enjoy this episode, and I really hope it helps you to keep going Wellfar this year.
Welcome to Wellfar, the weekly running podcast that will be by your side as you train for 26.2. It's hosted by me, Amy Hopkinson. By day, I'm Women's Health Digital Editor, but when not in the office, I'm a marathon runner too. So this year, with the race on the horizon, I'm here to help with blisters and bruises, runners' highs and lows, what to eat before Sunday run day, and how the heck you refuel after. So put on your trainers, plug yourself in, let's get going.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Wellfar. Wow, what a bananas week I've had. Aside from all my normal running, I also hosted a couple of extra special women's health run clubs, which meant that I travelled up to Manchester and we had one in London, and the team have gone off to Glasgow. So they were super fun, but extra miles in my week. I also found a love of Easter themed baking. I've been making full use of those special offers on Easter chocolate and putting all of that kind of lovely bunny-shaped and egg-shaped goodness into cookies and having them when I come in off my long runs. I've also been starting to plan my trip to Paris for the Paris Marathon, which included getting a medical to say I'm fit to run. It's a requirement by French law. So that was just another thing I needed to do. So there's not been much time, but it's also been a really great week. One highlight for me was joining the Twice the Health Marathon Run Club last weekend for 18 very windy miles. It was really, really nice to have some company for the 3 hours of running and also chat to other women about how they're faring with training for 26.2. As much as I am loving this year's journey, I'm finding it quite tough and also slightly lonely at times, I suppose, when I get up on a weekend and I just go running for hours and hours on end. I mean, I have had Ted join me for the kind of final miles on a lot of those runs, but it still does mean that I am out running for kind of 2 hours 45 by myself. So to run with other women was really, really nice. And also we chatted about what we're finding tough, what we were enjoying, and the things that we kind of really needed to conquer. And one of the things that kept coming up was that moment when you're running kind of 15 miles plus and your mind starts to question whether your body can actually do it. And during a panel talk at the end of a run, one of the coaches that was there, called Luke Tiberski, who is a health and mindset coach with a specialism in endurance sports, actually shared this tip for dealing with that kind of lack of confidence that you get during a long run. He basically said what can help is if you flip your focus when you're running. So if you are focusing on how everything hurts and how your legs feel like lead and how you're struggling to even keep moving forward, his advice was to start thinking about the things which are going on around you, not inside of you. So find some pretty flowers, or look into the distance and see what you can see, or focus on the smiles of happy people walking past, and just kind of stop thinking about how tough everything is and start thinking about how nice everything is around you. He also said this can work the other way around too. So if you're running in howling rain or really windy, blustery conditions and you're taking a bit of a beating, he said, rather than focus on what's going on around you, start focusing on what's going on inside of you. So think about how good you feel and how ace a job your body is doing. I've yet to put this tip into practice, but I am going to try it on this week's long run. If you guys do the same, let me know. I'd love to know whether this works for you. And if you want to look up Luke so that you can find out more about this and other work that he does, he's on Instagram as Luke Tiberski. So that's LukeTyBurski. You can also join the Twice the Health Run Club by looking up the girls. They're at Twice the Health and booking on via Eventbrite. So that's what I've been doing to make the long runs a bit easier. But what about you guys? What have you been doing? Do slide into my DMs, because I'd love to hear more about your journeys. And actually, one of the things which you kept asking me about was injury and how to deal with it. So for everyone who has sent me one of those type of Instagrams, you are going to love today's episode. In the studio, I have a guy called Bradley Skanes, who's a physiotherapist and run coach. Today, we're going to talk about prehab and rehab and running injuries. So keep listening for that. I then go on a run with Susie Chan, who was actually a Run Chat suggested guest by you guys. So this show is actually quite a lot about you guys this week and what you wanted to hear. I go on a run with Susie Chan and we conquer a few very muddy miles, and we talk about how she went from being a single mum lacking in confidence to an ultra marathon runner. It's a goodie. But before I do that, a quick shout out to our Wellfar listener of the week, Hattie Sherwood. That is you. Not only did you hit your longest mileage yet, but I loved your Instagram about your sister and her boyfriend selling cakes to help raise money for your Save the Children Marathon Fund whilst you did it. I love, love, love the family teamwork, and it made me think of my own family. So well done, Hattie. Well done to your sister and her boyfriend. Keep up the good work. Right then, guys, let's get on with this week's show, and I will see you all on the other side. Today in the studio is Brad Skanes. Brad is a specialist musculoskeletal physiotherapist with great hair. Not that relevant to your running, but something you can't see from this podcast. Brad works privately in London and Chelmsford for the British gymnastics teams and helps clients suffering from running injuries. He's passionate about applying sound and robust rehabilitation principles to pain and injury to help you guys and others stay fit and healthy. Welcome, Brad.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So in your practice, what is the most common running injury that you see?
Probably has to be knee pain. There are sort of various different knee sort of pains that you can get, but the most common we see is something we call, or we term, patellofemoral syndrome or patellofemoral pain. Sounds pretty horrendous, syndrome, yeah. and stuff there. But
did you say that because I just screwed my face up?
Yes, that was it. I thought, oh no, that's the wrong term. Patellofemoral pain is a bit of an umbrella term, and basically all it means. So the patellofemoral joint is the joint between the kneecap and the femur. And the way that kneecap sort of glides over the knee. And there's a lot of structures which sit behind the kneecap, which can get inflamed, can get sore, can get irritated. And it's often the pain that you finish up running or halfway through your run. It's sort of all around the knee. You can't really pinpoint where it is. It feels a bit behind the kneecap, a bit deep. And that's probably the most common thing that we see in runners.
And is there a way to prevent it?
There is. As with a lot of running injuries, it's an overuse injury. It's a repetitive sort of injury. And when we look at the incidence of running injuries, there's some research that shows us about 80% of running injuries are due to training error. So quite often these injuries occur because people do too much too soon. So they go from 5K to 8K to 10K. And most runners would have heard that sort of 10% increase week on week that we should be doing to sort of hit that sweet spot, as it were. So if we allow the body to adapt and we gradually increase our sort of weekly load, we can go a long way to preventing injuries like that. The second way that you could prevent it is a term us physios like at the moment is all about capacity. And when we're running, the ground force reaction on the knee is somewhere in the region of 4 to 7 times body weight going through your knees. So strength and condition is kind of what we need to do from there. If we're strong, particularly through the quadricep muscles, but also glutes and hamstrings and calves, if we're strong through there, we'll shock absorb for that joint and be able to sort of protect ourselves through any injury there.
I don't think I've really thought about it that much before, but obviously when you are running, you are propelling your weight from one leg to the other. And then absorbing the force.
Yeah, absolutely. Every landing that you have is straight away. Even walking up and down the stairs is 2 times your body weight going through your knee, because you're on one leg and you're driving your sort of your weight of your body up. So you think of the landing force from sort of midair to the ground. It's a fair bit of weight going through the knees that the body needs to be sort of ready for, and that comes from strengthening, but then also allowing the body to adapt through sort of slow progression of our running distance.
So that 10% rule really is a thing.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I think the important thing for runners is that's your weekly load. So it's not, okay, I run 4 times a week, I'm going to increase every run by 10%, because then you're going to get into some difficulty. So it's working out what your load is on a week, whether you do it by time or distance, and increasing that by 10%.
Okay. There was
a little bit of new research which showed we could probably push it a little bit more. So I think the sweet spot's probably around about 15% in the lower distances. So when you're going from sort of like 5K to 10K, you can probably go to about 20, 30. But once you're in the bigger distances, stick to your 10% and you should be okay.
Obviously, a lot of my training, and I think a lot of the people that have been listening in, has been done on roads. And I've read before that's quite impactful on your joints. Is there a way to limit that?
Again, similar to what we just said. So the stronger you are in your muscles, then the more shock absorbance you're going to have for the joint to sort of counter that ground reaction force from the floor. So strength is the key. Other things you can do, obviously, making sure you've got sort of the right footwear. And
do you see a lot of people coming in the wrong footwear?
I suppose I see a lot of people who maybe need to update their footwear. So they've been running these trainers for a couple of years and they're a little bit worn. It's difficult. There's lots of different bits of research on it, but generally trainers last between sort of 300 to 500 miles. So I think just making sure they're in good working order and they're comfortable. And I think that's one of the most important things for people, is being comfortable in what they're wearing.
I asked our amazing listeners what niggles they had so I could put questions to you. And one of the things that came up time and time again was shin splints. Do you see a lot of this?
Yes, yeah. I've had it myself as well. It's really painful.
What are shin splints?
So shin splints, by definition, is it's an exertional pain in the lower leg. So on the inside border of the tibia, of the shin bone. The sort of the medical term we use now is medial tibial stress syndrome, or MTSS for short. And it's a bit of an umbrella term. And actually, I read an article the other day which says it could relate to 30 different pathologies, which is amazing. But we need to consider it on a sort of spectrum. And I think the important thing, for particularly for listeners, if they are getting a bit of pain around that area, is it's considered on the spectrum of a bone stress injury. So at one end of the continuum, you've got stress fracture. On the other end of the continuum, you've got maybe a bit of a muscle dysfunction. So it could be tibialis anterior, tibialis posterior, soleus, which is just causing a bit of pain. It could move into like a tendinopathy. So you've got a few tendons around there as well. It could be some inflammation of like the lining of the bone, so the periostomy, which sits around the bone. It could be all these things together.
And how do you treat shin splints as a physio?
Yeah, I think the first thing we need to do is work out why it's come on. Going back to sort of the training error, that will relate to sort of reviewing what a person's been doing in the lead up to the pain coming on. So I normally take a snapshot of the 4 weeks before.
Right.
Because a dramatic increase in load could last for about 4 to 6 weeks. That's what the science tells us. If we increase by more than or 30% or more, our risk of injury is dramatically increased by about 4 times. So progressing that quickly can cause obviously the knee pain or something like shin splints. I'm a runner myself, so I never like to stop people from running. But sometimes with shin splints, we need to, just okay. because of the continuum it sits on. So because there's potentially risk of stress fracture, we need to be a bit careful, a bit sensible with it. But the best thing is to work out when the pain comes on. So if it's not painful on walking, and if we can do a little bit of running, so say we can run for 5K or run for 5K, if the pain comes on at 6K, we'll be okay. So we can keep you running, we can cross train the rest whilst we let it settle down. And we can do our normal stuff in that period. So we can ice, elevate, rest. Where a lot of runners go wrong is it settles back down and they go back to running. And they miss that kind of bridging the gap between getting pain free and then being able to return to what they would hope to be doing there. And again, that sort of involves some strengthening work and a slow and gradual build up of sort of increasing the load tolerance. So I get my patients doing a lot of hopping, a lot of multi-directional hopping to increase the tolerance of the bone and the tissue to be able to then go back to running after that.
Okay. I'm just now thinking, like, it's totally okay to come in off a run, ice your shins and watch Netflix. That's what I've just interpreted from that.
Yeah, that's like a pretty good idea. As long as once the pain settles, you're doing a bit of work to strengthen the calf and so on and so forth.
Is calf strength really important to running?
It is, yeah. The calf is probably the most important muscle for runners. We've got a lot of research that shows if your calf strength improves, your times improve.
Right. The other common pain that people are suffering from, it seems, is plantar fasciitis.
So the plantar fascia is a thick sort of band of tissue on the bottom of your foot, again, quite common in runners. Plantar fasciitis is actually a bit of an outdated term. So we actually call it, it's a bit of a mouthful, but we call it plantar fasciopathy now.
I'm glad you said that and not me.
Opathy basically means it's a bit degenerative, which again sounds horrendous, but it just means the tissue's broken down a little bit. So it's a bit like a tendon in that respect, in that it's involved in transferring load and it has a certain capacity. And if we keep pushing beyond that capacity without the adequate recovery, the tissue then breaks down.
Right.
And it becomes sore. It's important to differentiate, because rest will take away the pain, but then someone will come back to running and the pain will come back. Because if the tissue's broken down, rest won't build the tissue back up. So that's where some strength work and some rehabilitation comes in to make it strong again, and then to build its capacity to go back to running. The sort of rehab for that, it's a bit of a variation on a calf race. It's a slight difference where we get a towel under the big toe and you basically calf raise on that. Just gets the plantar fascia working a little bit more.
Okay. And so should you stop running if you're feeling that pain?
Again, it's finding the boundaries that you can and can't do. So if you've got pain on walking, then yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're not going to be running. If you can run a certain distance without pain, then we can work within that, because it all becomes part of the rehab itself there.
I'm really guilty of putting off going to see experts. I do it with my doctor, I do it with my dentist. Yeah. And so I put things off until it gets really bad. And then I'm like, now I need to invest in this. But with physio, is it better to come in the beginning when you notice some kind of pain? Does that help? Or
It does. Early intervention does get people better quicker.
I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah. I mean, when you've been in pain for a while, you get a lot of changes. So just from being in pain, you lose muscle mass. So your strength is reducing just from being in pain itself. And then you'll move different ways. You'll get a few compensations sort of elsewhere.
So don't delay. I've got one more topic of pain, which has come up. And people complaining of shoulder pain when running.
Mm-hmm. It's quite common. It's often that we just hold ourselves quite tight and tense whilst we're running. So it probably falls a little bit more into the spectrum of like coaching and sort of thinking about that upper limb technique, relaxing the shoulders. Breathing can be really helpful sort of then. So if we're moderating our breathing, we can often relax through the sort of thoracic and the shoulders there. If it becomes quite persistent, I'd maybe have someone look at the runner's gait and the technique that they're using to try and relax up around the shoulders. If it spills over into other activities other than running, then maybe there's something going on in the shoulder and then probably see a physio about that.
Physio.
But if it's a pure sort of running, you're feeling just tight and tense around there, then it's probably related to sort of running technique and stuff there.
I know we've recently mentioned calves, but that's another thing which people have asked me. They've said, tight calves, what can I do about them and how can I deal with them?
Yeah, again, common in runners. The calves are doing a lot of work, as we mentioned. They're involved in the landing phase. They're involved in the propulsion phase. The question we have to ask is, why are they tight? Because tightness is normally the product of something, whether that's a positional thing or often with runners, it's a weakness thing. So we're saying that they probably haven't got the strength and capacity to do what we're asking them to do.
Right.
A nice little test for that is calf raises. So we've got some normative data, not runners, but just the general population. Fit, healthy female should be able to do 21 single leg calf raises off a step. The males are slightly more at 24. So that's a good starting point.
And can you do them just off a curb?
You can do it just off a curb, just off your bottom step.
And then would you then do calf raises most days or is it like a few times a week?
Yeah, so you can kind of integrate it into your strength and conditioning program if you haven't got like an issue or pain or you're rehabilitating. So the common thing is S&C should probably be done a couple of times a week. I'm guilty of only doing lower limb probably once a week, so that's coming from a physio.
We're all judging you.
Yeah, damn. So just integrating it into that, the idea is to eventually go heavier, because again the calves might be somewhere in the region of 3 times 5 times body weight through the running phase, so eventually you want to load it up and get some weight going through it. But as a baseline sort of strength test, you can work on the body weight there.
So there we go, ladies, 21 calf raises. You've got to try that this week. Guys, you've got to do more. Sports massages. Do you think they're a luxury or a necessity for runners?
Depends on the runner. So there was actually a nice paper that came out last year, which compared a few recovery measures and massage came out on top.
Okay.
So it was the best form of recovery for DOMS and perceived fatigue. If you find it helps you recover, then it's a necessity. If you're fine as you are, you find you can bounce back and do your next run okay, then don't worry. I always say performance is sort of fitness minus fatigue. So you've got to recover, and it's just down to that individual to sort of find what works best for them.
I'm now intrigued. What do you do to recover?
The most helpful thing that I found, and is a real hot topic in the medical world, is making sure I'm getting more sleep than I used to. That's our sort of biggest recovery, and I've always been guilty of being a very early riser and going to bed a bit later than I should, and getting nutrition right as well, and making sure our energy stores are up and ready to go, because we definitely don't run marathons to lose weight, so you've got to have that energy level ready to go.
And my last question for you is, being a physio with loads of experience in running injuries, what's your one piece of advice that you would give this year's runners?
Take it easy on the training. So 80% of running injuries are due to training error. So getting the programming right is absolutely key. Keep in your mind that sort of 10 to 15% rule, particularly as you get into the back end of the training. And kind of fitting into that is, don't panic if you miss a run. Don't try and squeeze it in, because you end up pushing yourself beyond the capacity that you have.
That was so useful and so helpful. So thank you for sharing your knowledge with the Wellfar community. If people want to get in touch with you, either about appointment or just to follow you, where is the best place?
I'm more and more active on Instagram these days, at physiobrad.
At physiobrad. That's great. And do you have a website?
physiobrad.co.uk.
I mean, that is so easy.
Yeah.
Guys, you've just got to remember physiobrad. Thank you so much.
That's all right. Thank you for having me.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So today, everyone, I have come out to a very windy, blustery Guildford to run with the lovely Susie Chan, who is an endurance runner and who you might recognise from the cover of Runner's World.
Yes.
Yes, I've seen you on there. Also, I think you've broken a record at some point.
Yes, that was a while ago, actually. I broke a world record for running on a treadmill for 12 hours, and it kind of went a little bit viral, and then of course it was eminently beatable, and so I held it for a few months, but I got the all-important certificate from Guinness.
And so that is just one of the many running highlights which you've come to be known for, because you're an endurance runner, and so you regularly run distances of like 100 miles.
I mean, I've run 100 miles actually, about four times,
right?
And I do sort of something called multi-stage races, so these are where you run day on day, you know, maybe for a week or so. But I think generally I probably don't run any more any less as we go for weekly mileage than an average keen runner, I would say.
Okay, but where did it all begin? Because obviously, your running journey started somewhere before you started running all of these ultras.
It's not actually that long ago. I think some people think I've been running for a very, very long time. I was actually in my mid-30s. I'm 43 now. So I was about 35, 36 when I started running. And I didn't want to start running, to be perfectly honest. My younger brother wanted to run a marathon to tick it off a bucket list in his life, and he sort of made me do this half marathon with him, and I had no idea. I'd never run, you know, I had no idea, but I thought, you know, I was in a bit of a rut, and so I thought, yeah, okay, I need a challenge. I'd never run anything like that in my life. and I ran it, and I can remember it vividly, because it was actually on trails, and I'd never run on trails, and it really hurt. It really hurt. I was in pieces, but I couldn't believe, you know, when I crossed the finish line, I couldn't believe I'd run 13 miles. I mean, it's a hell of a long way. I just felt elated, basically, that I'd done it.
And so did you immediately sign up for another race?
Yes, or did you? Pretty much. So I remember the next day when I'd kind of, I can remember it really hurt to walk. I was struggling to step off curbs because my legs are so ruined. But I just, it made me feel good about myself and sort of good inside. So I just thought, oh, well, I'll keep this going. And I think I signed up to 10K, which seemed a bit more manageable. And then it very, very, very quickly got the bug.
And so is it now your full-time passion career?
It is. So it's completely... I know it sounds really cheesy, like I'm being slightly dramatic, but genuinely, it has completely changed my life. I went from being a sort of very, you know, I had no confidence, single mom. You know, I was just in a quite a sort of, not a great place. And, you know, in a sort of 8 years I've been doing it, it's now what I do for a living. I've seen some fantastic places. I've met some unbelievable people. And I've given up a 20-year career working in the museum and gallery sector where I used to work in the middle of London. And now this is what I do.
You're saying it with such a big smile on your face.
Yeah, well, it's got, I mean, I did enjoy my job, actually. I'm not going to pretend I didn't, because it was a lovely sort of sector to work in. But if there's something quite, I don't know, I don't have to get up and get on a commuter train anymore. And, you know, and it's never lost on me how, what an opportunity it is. And I'm just trying to embrace it and make the most of it, because it's probably not going to last forever, let's be honest.
And you mentioned you've got a child.
I have, yes.
Have you got a boy or a girl?
She's a girl, so she is not really a child anymore. She's 17 now.
Oh, okay.
I can credit her for my life sort of taking this turn, because I felt a bit guilty about, you know, running is in some ways, it's quite a selfish sport, you know, you're doing it for yourself, you're out by yourself, you know, and it took me away from her and to kind of justify, I guess, to myself and hope one day that she'd understand what I was doing, I started writing a blog. So I thought, when she's older, you know, she'll realise why I decided to go run through a desert for 10 days or whatever. And I started writing this blog just to kind of, in hope one day she'll read it and understand.
And what has been, you've just mentioned running through the desert. Is that Marathon de Saab?
That's the one, yeah, yes. That's the one. You have to run 250 kilometres approximately 150, 155 miles across 6 days in the Sahara. And normally it follows roughly the same format, with sort of 3 days of about 20 milers, and then an ultra marathon on the fourth day, which can be anything from 45 miles to 57 miles, I think I've run, and then a marathon, and then a fun run at the end. And then the really hard bit is it's self-sufficient, so that means that you have to carry everything you need to survive for that week, running in the desert on your back.
Even water?
So the only thing they supply is water,
right,
which is rationed. So you have a certain quota of water and you're not really allowed to go over it. If you do, you get penalised or disqualified if you have too many. And then they sort of put a blanket on sticks in the desert if you'd sleep under. But other than that, all of your sleeping gear, your food for the entire week, which weighs a lot, and all of your safety kit, you have to carry with you. But I maintain this. I genuinely maintain this. I've done it 4 times now.
Wow.
And I've seen people from all walks of life complete this race. If anybody wants to do it, they can do it. It's just more of an attitude, really.
Obviously, it is brutal, the miles. But is it tougher on your body or your mind?
Do you know what? The toughest thing, body-wise, I mean, I'm not going to pretend it doesn't hurt your feet, because even if you Google Marathon de Saab, you're likely to get lots of pictures of blistered feet, because the sand is quite a tough environment to run on.
Yeah.
Other than that, really, the number one thing, which I always struggle with, and most people do, is the fact that you're starving to death gently across the week, because you're having a lot fewer calories than you are spending, because you're having to carry your food. So it gets really tough, you know, by day three you're just sort of fantasizing about roast potatoes and things.
And then does everyone get hangry?
It's a collective hangry in the camp, but you're all in it together. The dropout rate of that race is very, very low. I mean, very extraordinarily low. And people walk it. There's people from all walks of life, all different sort of levels of running and walking ability, finish that race. And the one thing they have in common, they want to finish it. And I think that's all you need to finish that race, or in fact, like a lot of races.
Yeah. And have you stayed in touch with anyone from it? Have you, like, formed a bit of a community?
Oh, yeah. So this is sort of the thing which you remember when you come back from that race is that you've been trudging through the desert for hours, but you get sort of put together into a tent of about 6 to 8 of you. And I've remained lifelong friends with these people each time I've done it. I've been talked into all sorts of stupid races by some of my fellow tent mates. Yeah, I mean, in particular, last year was really great, because I did it with some of my best friends, husband and and it was just a wonderful week.
Do you think that that community aspect of running is kind of partly what's kept you going?
Oh God, it's completely what's kept me going. When I think back to my favourite races, you know, sure, I've had some PBs which I'm not too embarrassed about. I mean, those days are pretty much long gone, but the bits I remember are the races I've had with my friends and the people I've met. You know, that's what, when I think about the running I've done, those are the memories which stay with me. You know, the fond memories, the ones that make me smile, and the best races have been the ones I've been with my mates, you know.
Oh, it's so nice, because we were chatting, wasn't we, just before we came on here and you picked me up from the station, and you were saying that your most memorable races are the ones when it's actually been about the actual run and not about a time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think anybody who runs is listening to this, you know, I think they'll know what I mean. You know, those ones where you're constantly looking at your pace. And sure, I mean, I'm not denying there's nothing. There's a really great feeling when you get a good time or even a PB. But you don't remember much about the race. You're too busy kind of focusing on the task in hand. But I've had some very memorable races where I've been with my friends, chatting, taking it all in, you know, and just enjoying the route.
The other year you had a bit of a setback, didn't you? And I hope you don't mind me asking.
No.
At the end of one of your races, you passed out at the finish line.
Yes, that was Chicago Marathon. When was it? Not last year, the very end of last, of the year before that. And I'd been feeling a bit weird, to be honest with you. I had a terrible cough. And it was very important to me to finish Chicago Marathon because it was the very last of the World Marathon Majors. And that's the six big global marathons. And if you finish all six, not many people have done it, you see. Not many ladies, especially. And I was like, right, well, I don't feel well, but I'm running this, which is probably not great. Anyway, I finished the race and I didn't feel great. And then I passed out, actually, and they'd never... I mean, my husband was there and my friend Sophie, and they'd never seen me do that. You know, I've run, as I say, some 100-mile races and been okay, but I felt terrible. I went home and had some investigation work and said I had a cancer in my neck, quite a sizable lump, which knocked me out for a couple of races for the next few months.
And you'd been training and you just didn't realise.
Yes, I mean, I'd actually felt terrible running along. I found it very hard to run fast, to draw my breath, you know. So there were all these sort of things. I was constantly tired. It was thyroid cancer, actually. So there were lots of sort of side effects happening, but all quite easy to explain away if you're a runner, you know, being slightly tired all the time. And I just thought I just was losing... I just wasn't as fit anymore, you know.
And how is it, because obviously you've come out the other side and
yeah,
you're fit and healthy today, but has it kind of changed how you treat or view your body?
Yes, oh, completely. It did actually knock me a bit, and I sort of reacted in a way which probably wasn't very sensible. I just sort of like, oh, I'm fine, and carried on running, and I did the marathon de Saab again 6 weeks after my second operation, and then did a 100-miler 4 weeks after that, you know, sort of just pretended everything was absolutely fine. Yeah. And I think in a way to kind of prove to myself that I was actually okay and I was still capable of doing these things. But then I got to, I think about September, October, and I just felt knackered, you know, and I just thought, probably need to have a bit of a rest and to look after myself. And so I dialed things back a bit. And, you know, I've had a few sort of problems afterwards, which, the, you know, the doctors are still monitoring. I've been sort of messing around with a bit of medication. I'm still sort of, I think I'm out the other side now. And it's good. I'm in a good place. I feel rested and sort of ready to go again.
So good to hear. So on the subject of keep moving forward and challenges, what's on the horizon for you this year?
Well, I had booked quite a lot in. Because I get a bit trigger happy, I get a bit starry eyed around races, but I've had a bit of an injury which is just taking forever to heal. I can run, but I have to be very careful about running longer and longer, and so I have in fact cancelled a couple of races, which is a shame. And so I've filled that void with the challenge of trying to go back a little bit to my roots, back to those 10Ks and those half marathons.
Ooh.
And maybe a little bit of track.
Are you having to do physio work for your injury?
Yes, every day. And I've been so good at it. I did a 24-hour track race in September last year, the end of September.
Where, oh, my gosh.
And it made my foot hurt. and I had to go to a foot doctor, you know, because I was like, this isn't really getting any better. He was like, so tell me, how this happened. And it was like, ah, well, here's the thing. Yes, you can barely hide his contempt for what it does with it. But, you know, so I'm on this sort of strict rehab rule, you know. I'm not going to lie, it's probably the dullest 20 minutes of my day, but yeah, they really have been working. When I started running, I think I did those typical things of getting a niggle, ignoring it, running through it, making it worse, being off for 4 weeks, you know. Yeah. You know, thinking that I could start running again, start running too early. So I've done all of those mistakes, and I've learned a bit of patience when it comes to injuries, and I think it's, you know.
Do you think you're the fittest you've ever been?
No. I am probably the fittest I've ever been, I think, was probably about 2015. I had some good results. And actually, it was when I did an Ironman, actually, which, so I was doing quite a bit of cross training for that, and I was so fit. And I completely didn't realise how fit I was until I started losing it. And I was running and banging out PBs all over the place, and now I'm not. I'm definitely not. I'd say probably pretty similar, full circle, to where I started. Right. because I sort of spent last year not in a great place physically. So
has that meant, though, that you've got mentally stronger, do you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean, I'm mentally in a better place. I'm mentally stronger. I can, you know, normally being injured or whatever would have probably annoyed me. Actually, what would have annoyed me more is I used to sort of be quite competitive with myself and, you know, running along. It all had to be at a certain pace and a certain time, and I'd get really sort of grumpy if I didn't hit those times. And actually, you know, I've got over that, you know. It's, yeah. Nobody cares what time I'm running other than me. So that's definitely helped kind of letting go, you know, of worrying about what my, you know, 10K time is.
What would you say has been, like, your biggest running highlights? Obviously, Marathon des Sables, I believe you've done that multiple times.
Yeah.
If someone said to you, out of everything you've done, what is your top 10 or top 5, actually?
Well, it's very different, actually. So in terms of races, I mean, it's very close to my heart, Marathon des Sables, but for one reason or another, you know, it's where it sort of all started for me. But I'd say Boston Marathon. If we're going to talk about the pure marathon experience, you know, oldest marathon in the world, I trained really hard to get there. And standing on that start line was just, I'll never forget it. It was up there. With, you know, it's probably one of the best road races I've ever done. Just in terms of the experience, I felt like a real privilege to be there. And then there's sort of fun races. There's one which I seem to keep going back to called Man v Horse. And that's in the Brecon Beacons in Wales. A lot of up and down.
You literally race horses, don't you?
You do race against horses, and it's huge fun. And there's all life is there. You know, you've got the proper elite fell runners. You've got people dressed as horses, you know. It's a huge fun. I mean, I love deserts. I do love sort of hot places and running in hot places, though.
And do you have music in when you run there, or do you?
Yeah.
You do?
When I'm by myself, yes. I do, actually. I run with music all the time. In races, I don't.
Right.
In ultra marathons, I think I might have dug the music out once or twice when things have got quite desperate. But, yeah, I do, actually. I do. I like running with music or the radio or, you know, something audible to pass the time a little bit.
I've been doing a lot of kind of books during my
marathon. Audiobooks.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Podcasts. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just anything to... Because you focus, if I'm doing sort of a long training run, if I'm doing it by myself, and it just passes the time, doesn't it, a little bit quicker. You don't do that thing, you end up sort of looking at your watch and suddenly moved by 0.3 of a mile. Yeah, and you're starting to get tired.
Yeah, what do you do on a race when that happens? That, like, you'll just find yourself counting down the mileage. Have you got any ways which you snap out of it?
Yeah, I'm quite, I try my hardest. I've developed a few sort of techniques. So I do a lot of focusing on the finish line and imagining that. I do a hell of a lot of, when I was doing that 24-hour track race, for example, as soon as the klaxon went off, it was like, you know, well, I'm not going to be doing this tomorrow, and this time tomorrow I'll be doing something else, you know, so putting myself after the event and having finished it, you know, mentally, and that helps distract me. I'm not saying it works all the time, and obviously I've had some sort of low points in races, we all do, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it always, for me, happens about two-thirds of the way through, whether that's 10K, you know, half marathon or 100 miler, it's always quite a tough patch. But one thing I have learned, if you just keep moving forward, focusing on the finish, you know, it does arrive, you get there.
Do you think your yoga kind of helps with that mentality? Because it sounds very yogic to me.
It does. Do you know what the yoga has helped me with? Is my breathing, actually. They do some techniques in yoga where it slows your heart rate, actually, when you sort of breathe, have a longer exhale. out of your mouth or whatever and breathe through your nose. And I'm not really heavily into yoga. I just like it because it is my stretching basically in 1 hour session. But I did, when I'm sort of struggling a little bit to get the breath in, I do try and do those little techniques, and it does actually help. It does actually make me feel a little bit calmer, you know, a tiny bit calmer.
I suppose it's bringing the focus back inwards again, yeah. Isn't it? As opposed to freaking out about what's going on around you.
Yeah.
On those kind of races, are you normally kind of... Obviously, there's not that many females that do them. Are you normally outnumbered by a load of guys?
What, in sort of ultramarathons?
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's definitely changed in the few short years I've been doing it.
Right.
There were not many ladies that did that sort of those sorts of races, you know. And now, definitely much more of a presence of females, and it's fantastic. And I'll tell you what is also really interesting is that women now, over these very long distance races, the gap is very narrowed, and it's not unusual for women to take the podium overall over men when you start looking at these longer distances. There's a lady called Courtney DeWalter. She's got the 100-mile trail fastest known time overall, and it's really interesting. And then women of a certain age, my age, are statistically more likely to finish ultramarathons. So it's interesting. I think somebody should be researching this. I'm sure they probably are.
Yeah.
And so it's really encouraging. And I think really strong female runners out there doing it, sort of representing, it's encouraging more women to have a go. I think a lot of people like ultramarathons because, well, I like them because they are much less focused on time. Unless you're one of the pointy end elites, you know, there's loads of really strong, amazing women out there doing that. But I sit sort of more in a mediocre middle patch. And it's much more about the experience, and the achievement, you know, what you're doing and the people you're with.
And you'll help each other out.
You're all in it together.
Because you're out there for a long time.
Yeah, you can sort of, you get kind of strung out as well in these races. So you can sort of latch on to another runner, and I've met people I've never met again in the middle of races, and you know, you have a little chat, you find out about people, and you know, you've passed 5 miles before you know it. It's quite special.
Would you say to everyone listening in who's about to go into their first marathon, we've got a lot of people doing London, some doing Manchester.
Oh yes.
Would you say if they're struggling just to talk to somebody, or what would be your kind of marathon tip?
It's incredibly exciting, but my key thing would be have your plan.
Right.
Don't worry about anybody else. Everybody else is going to go off very, very fast or slightly too fast, and just sort of really take those first 6 miles nice and easy and do your own thing. And if you are struggling, maybe feed off the crowd. The crowds are just ridiculous in these marathons, the big city marathons. I've latched onto runners before when, you know, somebody who seems to be keeping the pace or a pacer, and just try and stick in a little pack, and it can help carry you along a bit.
And what about running gels?
Yeah.
Are you a fan?
So it took me a while to find the ones that work, put it that way.
Right.
But I generally have managed to get my body used to running quite a long way on not a huge amount. So my gel plan for a marathon, I have gels which require less water, not very sugary ones. And so I'll have one at normally miles 7, 14, 20, and then probably stick another one in before.
Right before the end, yeah.
So it's a little boost. It depends how I'm feeling. So, I mean, I've used other things as well to help get me through. There's sort of marathons and half marathons. So I've used, you know, like jelly beans and water. But it is actually really important to make sure, because you probably won't feel hungry and you probably won't feel like you need it, but to make sure you try and get the energy in you, whatever form that is, before you think you need it.
And do you have anything you do straight after a race?
Oh yeah, I normally have a pint of beer and a pizza. It normally involves something like that, yeah. Something probably reasonably unhealthy to balance it all out. So I'm not really, I don't really do takeaways. But whenever I've done quite a long ultramarathon,
that's what
we do. We do phone fast food pizza.
Oh, do you? And you get it delivered?
Yeah, that's my little treat.
Oh, and that is such a great way to end this chat. I really, really hope you've enjoyed my run with Susie. Where can people follow you, catch up with you, find out what you're doing?
So I'm Susie Chan. That's SusieChan. Just have a little Google. You'll find me on social media. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I've got a webpage, so just hit me up if you have any questions about any of that.
Amazing. Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Wow. Okay, I was just about to say thanks, guys, for tuning in as this massive dog appeared out of a car.
It is generally the size of a bear.
It is the size of a bear. I'm going to leave you with that image and catch up with you all next week. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Wellfar, your guide to conquering 26.2. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do take 30 seconds to rate and review us on iTunes. It really does make all the difference, and I and the team read absolutely everything you write, which means the world to us. New episodes will be released every Sunday on all the usual podcast platforms, so please do subscribe and never miss a notification. Until then, thanks again to all of you for listening and supporting us, and thanks to Mags Creative, the producers of this show.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.